Our episode 48 guest, Kelly Ann Powers, is a third-generation artist who created a podcast to help artists become better painters. She is the founder and host of Learn to Paint podcast. Stay tuned for more from Kelly.
Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Hello, dear audience. Here we are again at Art Ladders, and this is episode 48. And we are so happy to be joined today with Kelly Ann Powers of the Learn to Paint podcast. Can't wait to tell you all about this and to have a listen with her too. So, Armin, how are you out there?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm happy to listen to Kelly talk about how she got into this and what a great job she's doing because we've listened to her podcast ourselves. Mm-hmm. And talk art.
That's wonderful. Kelly, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here and talk with you guys all about art.
Oh, you know, I was just telling you, I've heard your voice on your podcast, but it's just so much more fun to be right here with you on Zoom. I see and hear you.
It's so different to be able to see. There's an art club as part of the podcast, and occasionally we'll do something in person, and there's always this, or not in person, but in person online. Mm-hmm. And there's always this long pause where everyone adjusts, like, oh yeah, this is your face. This is the face that goes with that voice. It's always an adjustment for me too.
It is so fun. Why don't we start talking about, you know, and it ties in closely with our episode 47. In episode 47, we did an homage to Armin's artist father. And you know, we were talking about family and the influence of family on our work. You have close connections. Can you tell us a little bit about your history?
So I grew up in a family with two artists. My mother was, and my grandmother still is, a practicing artist at 100 years old. And, you know, I think, as you know, Armin, that there's like pros and cons to growing up with someone who is an artist. And the cons were that felt taken when I was younger, a young adult, that like that role felt taken. And so I actually am a latecomer into art. But the pros far outweigh the cons. And growing up, seeing two women struggle with figuring out how something that they care about so much fits into a life was something that I'm still benefiting from.
Right.
Oh, interesting.
I'm sorry to break in here, but supported by your family to be an artist? But you said you did it later. So let me ask you this. Did you feel like you were trying to be forced into the arts or?
Not at all. I think one of the things that I really benefited from growing up with artists and just supportive parents is they took any creative pursuit, and I had a lot of them, seriously. Mm. Like as soon as I came to them and said, whatever the flavor of the week was, like, I'm going to be a musician. I'm going to be a filmmaker. They were just there with me and said like, okay, what is it going to take? You know, that they didn't just tell me great job. They said great job. And this takes work. And they knew it took work because they were doing that in their own art practices. And I think for me, so I benefited that through all of my creative pursuits. But I think I'm really realizing how much I benefited from that now, like even all these years later, realizing what an incredible lesson it was to grow up seeing the work it takes to be an artist, that I still had to internalize that. Like I had all the same problem artist myths that everyone else had. Like I thought like, oh, it's in my blood. I should just be able to draw after not ever trying to draw. You know, like I had those things that I had to overcome too. But once I did, I could really recall those experiences of being like, oh no, this takes work and it's wonderful and it's great. And that work can be really fun, but it's still going to be work.
Right. I think that's what, you know, people need to know, that it doesn't come for free. You got to work at it. You know, I remember having people come in my class and, what kind of brush do I paint a bush with? And I'm like, there is no bush painting brush. It's all about the technique, not the brush. So
I remember when I was really young, probably 7, 8, 9, I really wanted to learn to draw horses. And I was frustrated that I couldn't draw a horse. And so my mom, and I still marvel at this, like, I didn't really understand it at the moment, but she said, okay, draw 100 horses every day and you're going to get really good. And I just thought, like, that's crazy. I'm not doing that. And then all these years later, I'm so thankful for that, because sure, some 7-year-olds would draw 100 horses every day. They'd get great. I chose not to. I didn't. But having that lesson of the 100 horses, like, it's going to take time and it's going to take commitment. And that's just part of it. But I feel so lucky that I had someone who didn't just tell me, like, oh, that's a perfect horse. She right. said, I hear that you want to be good at this. Let's talk about how.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So all the parents that are listening, you know, take heed of this, because when your child says they want to draw, thank God they're not playing video games for 5 minutes, you know. So encourage them, you know, really encourage them. Mm-hmm. As your parents did, Kelly, and my dad. So
that's right. That is. And the other thing that I gleaned from reading a little bit of background on you, there was a technology type of element that your parents went into as well early on, you know, well early on, with video taping artists. What was that like? Were you in the recording studio with them?
So my parents were always entrepreneurs. My dad is still very much an entrepreneur. And so I grew up at some point. My grandmother is a watercolorist and taught Jan Koons. She's taught, you know, all over the country. Mm-hmm. And at some point she was getting tired. I mean, like, as you guys know, like, traveling and teaching is exhausting. It's wonderful, but it's also a lot of work. So they hired a production company to film her video, but that production company didn't know anything about watercolor. And so they were like, you know what? We could do this. We could figure this out. Let's start a video production company that's how to paint, how to draw. And I remember, you know, I guess it would have kind of been the equivalent of Black Friday. Like, I was just stuffing envelopes to try to send out products in our living room. Our living room would be converted into like a warehouse. And so when I went to college for video production, I came out of college looking for a job and they needed an editor. And so I went back officially, that other labor was unpaid, went back officially and became an editor for them. And that's where my technical art education began. It began in the editing, listening to these modern masters teach on video. So the company was called Creative Catalyst Productions. It was so fun. And then eventually I became a director and I worked on the marketing side of things, but I edited, I think, over 50 videos, and it was 5 years, 6 years, 7 years of every day spending 8 hours with an artist teaching. And it was incredible.
Oh my goodness. You know, would you have been going to the trade shows at a certain time?
Absolutely.
I remember, and I believe it was California, it could have been Anaheim. And you were there, and I believe you were hosting workshops. Would that have been your group?
Maybe. I don't know. My mom and dad did the circuits. Yeah.
Okay. That would have been a little bit ago. But how interesting. So that gave you especially for your podcast now, a lot of wonderful experience with all of it.
It really was. And I think that for me, this is the connections I'm sort of making after the fact, mm-hmm. that so much of that time in the editing room was listening. And there's something really powerful about listening and being able to play back, listening and be able to play back, that it takes a while to absorb information. Mm-hmm. And also every time we walk into a situation where we're learning from a teacher, we are a different person than we were a year ago. And so sometimes I would go back and watch these videos again, and I knew more, and the things I got from these artists changed. And I think that that definitely has informed how I approach the podcast, is that I want people to be able to listen to these conversations a year from now again and realize, like, they are different. So they will learn different things from those guests. Because, as you know, like, you talk to someone and, like, it's impossible to, like, when you guys teach, like, your students can't absorb everything. But yeah, when they come back the next time, they'll absorb new things because they're building on all of the things they learned before. And I love that about living when we do.
Yes. Oh, I love that too. Absolutely. When I give a lecture, some folks will come back for another time and I'll say, who's back? You know, and they come up to me after and say they end up learning so much more the second time around. And with your podcast, Kelly, I will sit there and listen. And then I go, wait a minute, what did they say? And run it, you know, run it back again until it's really into my brain. It's wonderful. I love that.
Kelly, do you ever get used to your own listening to your own voice?
It's so strange. It's so strange that, and I'm more used to it now. Because I edit for a long time. I have a little bit of help now, but I edit a bunch. I used to edit all of it, and now I edit it still, but the final passes. And so at some point, it just, like, grinds into your own head. But it was tough the first couple episodes, and it's something I try to warn guests too, that it feels so strange to hear yourself.
It does. And
I think that can be really, it's just strange to hear yourself.
I still hear myself, and I'm like, is my voice really that high? You know, I think I'm talking like this, but no, I talk like this when I get it. So I have some of that going on.
It is a strange feeling. I always feel like my volume level, that I'm yelling into the microphone. And so, you know, you mentioned you have your little sticky note that says something. What did that say? It was so...
I have actually a couple of sticky notes. They're all over. So I have one for being interviewed that says slow down.
Slow down. Because
I get excited. And I think something about the medium of audio is that we can lose people. And so it's important to pace it. But for when I'm doing interviews, I have ask questions, don't over explain, stay curious, and follow where the conversation leads.
Very good. Very good. So
that's what I try to remind myself going into, that I go in with a plan, but every conversation is going to go where it goes. And, like, that's why we're there. So just let it be, have faith. And that's something I'm working on.
Mm-hmm. We kind of go through that mantra as well when we start an interview. And I'll often say to Armin, if the interviewee is on a roll, let them go. Because that's when we're going to get the really nitty gritty. So, Kelly, feel free. Ramble on. You know, we have some questions, but I love that organic feel of just letting the conversation go. Now, you are a practicing artist as well. Your journey into that, you know, probably pre-podcast, pre-blogs, explain to us. And visually, I mean, verbally, tell us about your style as well.
So I think I finally did the math, and I think I've been painting for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was important to put a number on it, because I think there's this tendency... When I started out, there's this tendency to look at other artists and think that they were born that way. And so for me, as someone who's in the art education space, I feel like it's important to say, like, this is kind of how long I've been doing it. I've been doing it seriously with some iteration for about 5 years. And because I think, when did we get started? It's hard to know. Right.
It is.
But my art practice today, I would say, is an art practice, where the woman who started 10 years ago didn't understand even what an art practice was. Mm-hmm. So I started about 10 years ago, and I started with mixed media. Again, I was editing in a dark room and discovered an artist named Ann Bagby, who does these beautiful mixed media. And I didn't know mixed media was a thing that existed. Mm-hmm. My mother and grandmother watercolorists. And so I really knew the watercolor world, but that didn't speak to me at the time. Mm-hmm. And so my journey has definitely gone through mixed media. And then eventually about 5 years ago is when I limited my palette, got rid of a bunch of materials, began to understand that you can either work horizontal or you can work vertical. And horizontal is fun. Horizontal is when you switch from mediums, materials, ideas, and it's great and you can learn so much. And then there's also vertical, that you limit yourself and you really start digging deep and you get comfortable with your materials and you suddenly realize that, you know, you're not limiting yourself. You're actually opening a door into so much possibility when you say, I'm going to stay here for a while. Mm-hmm. And that's really where I've been for the last 5 years, is figuring out. So I still change from, I now jump between floral and landscape, but it really is about, you know, I'm really focused on learning. I don't sell my work. About a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I just said, you know what, I'm going to take that pressure off myself. Mm-hmm. And it really is about learning. So if you see my work on Instagram, it's at Kellyanne Powers. I'll be doing flowers and then suddenly I'll jump to landscapes. A month ago, I just did daffodils for a solid month. And I really have given myself permission to go where I'm interested in, but have the discipline to not get distracted if that's not going to serve me. And that's a fine line, but to really give myself permission that I'm not painting for anyone else. I'm really painting for the exploration of painting. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point, because, you know, your mindset, if you have to make a living off of art, is what will sell, right? And that might not be what you like to do. And then everything just crashes. So that's smart to be able to do that in the manner you did that. It's also interesting that orientation, how that means a different thing to you of the picture plane. So, or horizontally or vertically and things like that. So I think that's good to hear for our audience too.
Yeah. And for me, I think it was 2021, or it was leading up to Black Friday, and I was seeing all these artists doing all these really amazing marketing things. And I was really feeling like I should be doing something. Like, I should be doing that. I have a marketing background. Like, I want to be taken seriously, like all these things that come with that. And I had this moment of like, but do I? Like, do I need to, like, let me question the premise. Like, do I need to sell? Do I need to have a Black Friday sale? Like, I'm not selling a bunch of paintings here. Like, what pressure am I putting on myself here? And I was surprised. And actually, I would highly encourage someone, like, if you're making a living selling your paintings, that's a different story. But if you're just getting started, I would encourage you to try and experiment, to give yourself 6 months where you never say DM for purchase. You never say, see it at my website. You never say, you know, DM me for prices, and just feel what that feels like. Because I was really surprised at what a difference taking selling off the table meant, mm-hmm. and the kind of protection it afforded my art practice. And so that means that now, for the daffodil paintings, I opened it up for like 2 weeks, said like, if you want to buy one, let me know. Here's the price. And then I closed it off again. And it really now has given me a baseline for how a protected art practice feels. And so if and when I ever decide to sell my work again, I now have that baseline of what it feels like and can make decisions. I think so many of us think that we need to sell because we want to be professional artists. We want to give it more time, like mm-hmm. really good reasons, but we don't maybe understand the cost of trying to sell our work. And there is a cost to trying to sell our work.
Mm-hmm. There really is. There's the energy involved, the mental, sometimes anguish of it all. And this is very refreshing because I've never really heard, Kelly, I've never heard this type of theory before. And it's very, very refreshing to hear.
It's so fun. Like it felt really weird at first and then it felt so good. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like what you were saying, like it takes mental energy. It just gives you a baseline to suddenly realize, I think as artists, sometimes me as an artist, I'm bad at understanding where my time goes because often how I assess my time is how I feel about the work I did, which has nothing to do with how long it took. And so I think sometimes when I had spent, you know, a week working on my website and a week writing all the captions for the paintings that go on sale, and then a week double, like all of that time builds up. And at the end, I have a website that can sell paintings. And that's great. I think websites are very important. The marketer in me says, yes, you know, have a presence, but that still is a cost. I still wasn't painting. That still is thinking time that could have been spent thinking about values and shapes and color, was thinking about SEO and pricing strategies. And that's important if you want to start a business. But if you just want to paint, or if you want to learn what a protected art practice feels like before you start selling your, I mean, there are so many different ways that you can build that without immediately starting to sell your work.
What, you know, along that line, and I'm kind of thinking of where Armin and I are in our journey in art. And yes, here we are spending a lot of time with websites, et cetera. Is this something you can, like you mentioned, baseline, turn on and turn off? Like, could we, of course, keep the podcast rolling, but take a break and say this, these 2 months, and I think I already know the answer to this, but I'm interested in your perspective. I love that you turned it on and turned it off at will.
Yeah, I am not great at taking breaks. So in theory, I love the idea of, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think you can. Like, I think the answer is I think you can. Mm-hmm. And I think being able to figuring out how is first understanding that you can. Mm-hmm. And that, and that maybe you need to, or not even need to, maybe you want to.
Maybe you want to. Yeah.
And just the wanting to feel what it feels like to create your art without worrying about selling is really powerful. And I think there's this thing that happens where, or this is how I experienced it, is that before you have an established style and before you have a following and before you have all these things, it's just you in a room trying to figure out, why won't this brush make that mark? Right. And you're just wondering, like, I'm a smart adult. Why can't I figure this out? So it's just you, like, trying to figure stuff out. And that is really hard to see the innate value of that. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of us start to sell our work because we're trying to figure out how to make our work feel like it has validation, because we haven't learned how to give it value internally yet. And so we're looking for external forces to give it value. And I think that's why we try to sell, is that, well, I can, you know, I'm using time, I'm using money, I'm using space in our home for this. If I'm selling paintings, at least that means I'm making some money from it. So I can take those resources. It gives us a reason to use our resources, an excuse to use resources for this thing. Whereas at some point, hopefully you make the shift to realize that you wanting to paint, you wanting to be curious and wanting to explore this, that is what gives it value. Mm-hmm. Your art practice doesn't get value because someone wants to buy a painting. Your art practice has value because it gives you curiosity and it gives you enjoyment and it gives you something that makes your life better.
Mm-hmm. You can ask those people, the question is, if you couldn't sell or wouldn't sell, would you still make art? Or is that the main carrot? And then how does that change what you do? You know, for me, there's a, you know, there's a sharing of ideas when I sell my work, right? When I see it on somebody's wall, they start up their own fantasies about it, and it keeps it going. That's more of a thrill to me than making money at it. Obviously, I don't mind money, you know, but the idea is more sharing ideas and sharing concepts and finding a kindred soul to do that. So that's more to me than the selling of it.
Yeah. And I think anytime someone has bought my work, I have been amazed at what a profound thing that is, that there's like a piece of me living on someone's wall and there's a piece of someone else living on my wall. Like, yeah. I think there's a kind of beauty that you get from selling your work that I am still wrapping my brain around, because it's so powerful, like how amazing that is. And so, yeah, I should say that this is never to say don't sell your work. And there are people artists that have thriving businesses, and it's so great that I think that there really is magic to selling your, because that's the pro part of it, right? The positive side. And I have to say, it does feel really good to know that someone would buy it. Like that's part of all of this, and that's part of the business side of it. And I could talk about the business side of it all day long. I love that part of it too.
you never see your work for the first time. The closest I get is when I see my work in somebody else's space, it's like I look at my work for the first time. And that's kind of a rush, I think.
I love that.
I do too. I love that part. I find that kind of tying into this thread of, you know, yes, there are professionals out and pro artists selling like crazy. And it's so hard. And for any artist, when we start comparing ourselves to others, that wraps up into it. And that's a drain on your energy as well.
You don't want to do that.
I catch myself saying, especially with social media now, you see what everybody's doing all the time. And I go, why haven't I done that yet? Why am I here? Why are they there? And so you're doing this thing. So in the morning, I try to wake up and say, do not compare yourself to others. Just do your work, Val. Keep on track. It's very distracting for me.
I think for me, I am always surprised that I went into art thinking that art was about the technical side, about learning your pigments, learning your brushes, getting really good with that side. And it is, like, that is definitely part of it. But the learning to sort of manage yourself as an artist for me has been a huge learning opportunity. And I think for me, part of that is because I'm a pretty type A person who believes in self-discipline, you know, that kind of approach. And I think for a long time, I confused being mean to myself about where I was with progress. Like, I thought if at the end of a day I didn't like my painting, that somehow yelling at myself about that would help me be better. And I think a lot of us do that when we're starting out. There's like there's a group of us that do that, that confuse being mean with working hard. And you can work hard. It turns out, I'm finding, you can be a hard worker and still be really kind to yourself. And in fact, if and when you make that switch, you are suddenly opening yourself up to a bunch of things you were blind to before, because I'm realizing that when I feel frustration in the studio, that is an indication to me that there is something here to learn. And in the first seven years of my art practice, I would hit frustration and like throw up my arms or leave the studio or say mean things about to myself and how I was never going to reach my goal. And that totally obscured any of the lessons that were there for the taking. Mm-hmm. And so now when I hit frustration, I say, there's something here to learn. Wow, I'm frustrated. Let's get through the frustrated part so that I can figure out what there is here to learn. Mm. And it has opened up. So I still get frustrated. I still need to deal with that. Take a walk, shake it off, go look at something pretty, pet a cat. But I don't abandon myself at that point. That's just the beginning of what I can get out of that situation. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe how much time I wasted just being mean to myself when there were so many good lessons there to learn. And, you know, I can hug younger Kelly and just be really glad that I now can see these things for what they are.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that is wonderful. Wonderful.
How do you measure success?
Ooh, did I paint today?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's like a up or down. And, mm-hmm. and then if I didn't paint today, because I'm not a daily painter, I'm constantly working to have a daily art practice, but I don't necessarily get it every day. Mm-hmm. I try to be really kind to myself. Like, yep, you spent 12 hours editing the podcast that day. Like, you used your time. That's like good work, you know, like maybe now go to sleep. Mm-hmm. And then what can I learn from this tomorrow? So I think for me, success is, am I staying curious? Am I not giving in to some of my default habits that are still there about being mean to myself and thinking that's discipline? And yeah, like, am I moving forward with my curiosity?
Sure. Mm-hmm. I have, you know, I'm 68, so I have a great big past and a small future. But, you know, when I was 15 years old and what I wanted out of art might have been pretty lofty. Cover of Art News, this kind of thing. And, you know, I wake up and I say, you know what? I'm an artist. I'm 68 years old. I'm still as excited about it. I still want to learn. I'm stoked. You know, I'm a success. You know, the cover of Art News might not happen.
I had an art buddy who said, I was in this group. We talked about art books, and every time the group came on, it's on Zoom, she was always doing art. She was cutting papers or something. And I asked her, like, you know, why? Like, you post every day, all these different things. And she's like, if I'm doing art, I'm an artist. Mm. Like, the end. And I feel like so many of us wait until we have a bunch of time or a bunch of space or some magical day where there's no laundry to do, the kids are all where they need to be, and all the bills are paid. Like, we wait for this magical time before we start anything, because we think, we look at the artists we love who spend all day painting. Well, we think they spend all day painting.
Right.
We say, I have to wait until I have that. And the last 2 days, I've been sort of I'm getting ready for a big, it's called the 20 for 20 art challenge. And the podcast starts in May. Mm-hmm. So my brain is really working on a bunch of things right now. And my painting practice has suffered. So the last two mornings, I have just made myself get in there and do like a 20 minute painting.
Mm-hmm.
And it is amazing how much joy and curiosity and like my brain is sparkling with different mm-hmm. ideas and different things I could try by just doing 20 minutes. And I think it's amazing. So yeah, some art takes longer amounts of time to get into the flow or deep thinking, all those wonderful things that time affords you. But that doesn't mean you can't feel like you have a successful art practice with much smaller chunks of time. And that is something that I think I learned from guests on the show. And then I really discovered it, like that became really true for me too, that like, you have to do less than every day than you think you do to feel really good about what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm still surprised by that sometimes, that I can get finished with a 20 tiny minute, you know, 24x4 painting. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so excited for the next painting session.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, yeah, you don't need a 4-hour painting session. You can do it in 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's a great, I even put a quote on Facebook about that. Van Gogh would say smaller steps. And I thought, Van Gogh said that. And my mother said that to me, Val, just go in there for 15 minutes in your studio. It usually goes into a deeper time period. It's usually 45 minutes, maybe 2 hours. But it's those little baby steps that make a huge difference.
What I tell my students, have a place where you don't have to get the stuff out and all that stuff, where you can just go in that room and say, hey, I'm going to spend 10 minutes here. And all of a sudden you spend an hour there. Yeah. But if you have to get everything out and you have to put everything away, that's going to take away that spark. And I also think part of making art is feeding your mind, listening to podcasts, reading about artists, or just going on Pinterest and see all the crazy things people are doing. And that feeds your mind. And that's part of the art practice as well. So it doesn't necessarily have to sit there and, in my case, pencil on paper. But I create when I'm driving. I create. I look at things. I said, "What about what if this and what if that?" So,
So true. So the podcast. Let's dive into that now. You have an absolutely wonderful artist on your podcast. Why did you start a podcast? What started all this?
Yeah, the podcast came about for a couple of different reasons. Through my professional life, I've gotten to have conversations with artists, both, you know, just a lot of talking with them. There was a while in my career where I helped artists design their teaching for video. So it was a lot of us talking about what was important to them and how then they wanted to show that, because teaching in person is different than teaching on camera. Mm-hmm. But I just really was having, I mean, I benefited so much from these conversations. And then also I really benefited from a mother and a grandmother who were constantly talking about art. And I think there's something about one of the things that I was really lucky growing up with is by having people who are important to you talk about something helps you understand that it has validity, that it's a valid use of your time. And I have just gotten so much about, like, there's something about talking with an artist that every one of the interviews, I learn something, or I think about something in a different way, or I'm every interview, I learn something. And I was thinking that, like, well, I'm having these conversations in private. What if I recorded them? And I have some technical background, and it was just sort of like, let's try this. I'd talked about it for several years. And finally my art buddies were like, "Hey, you, like, you just need to do this." And I was like, "Oh, you're right. I do just need to do this." And so that's how that started. And it's been great. I am amazed at the generosity of guests. And there really is something about when you say yes to be a guest on a show, you are putting yourself into those people's hands.
Right.
And the artists who say yes to me, some of them know me, but most of them don't. And so when they say yes to me, especially before the show had been around very long, that was a lot of faith in me. And I really appreciate them being willing to say, like, yes, stranger on the internet, I will let you ask me questions for an hour and put it out to the world.
You know, and I was fairly starstruck when I asked you, Kelly, because I'd been listening to your podcast. I thought, would she say yes to this? And so the generosity, I truly appreciate. I'm so happy that you said yes. And what keeps you going? What's that carrot? Because a podcast is work too. And I think I know what your carrot is, but I'd like to hear from you what it is.
I love the thinking side of art. So for me, I think for a long time, I didn't see myself reflected, even though it's silly because both of my mom was and my grandmother they're thinking artists, that I think there's so much thinking in art. And some people approach art through the feeling side, and I think that's amazing and beautiful, but that's never been my experience. And the podcast sort of attracts people who approach art through the thinking side. Maybe we're also the people who get self-hatred-y on ourselves. I don't know. I think that's in all of us, unfortunately. But so I think there's something about being able to just really think about art for an hour with a guest. And that thinking part of it, like, I love the work. I love getting physically into paint, and I love being surprised by how two colors that you thought they knew what they did next to each other do something different that particular day. Like, I love all of that. But being able to sit and hear how another person processes through their work and through their experience and how they've learned, that is such a joy. And I love the interviews themselves, but for me, that's fun. But for me, it's the editing part. The show is highly edited, mm-hmm. and it's me sitting basically in an editing room again, just listening to these guests talk about their experiences and their lessons, and the amount that that allows me to think about my own practice is so rewarding. Mm-hmm. And it really, I hope I can go back and look at where I've interviewed a guest, because each guest I've listened to has influenced my work in some way. They're yes. often small ways, but mm-hmm. they influence the work. And that is such an, I mean, that's so lucky. I feel so lucky to be able to have that. And it's also just, I think there's something about art can be a really isolating experience where we have to do the work. No one can hold the brush and teach you. Like you can have good teachers and highly encourage people to find good teachers. But it's still you with a brush in a space. And one of the things I think keeps coming back and again is that even though we're alone in our studios, we are connected through this thing. And the experiences we hear, there's something about the first time you hear someone say like, yep, planning will help you paint looser. And you're like, whatever, planning, help me paint looser. The second time someone says it, the third time someone says it, the 17th time someone says, hey, if you're having trouble getting loose paintings, might you try planning? Suddenly you're like, you know what? I'm going to try planning. And then you try planning and then you have a looser painting at the end of, you're like, okay, it only took 47 guests on the show to tell me that maybe I should try planning. And so that's just the nature of learning, and to be able to be in it with guests is just, it's so incredible.
That is so.
And then your listeners get the same thing.
Yes.
You know, your followers and your listeners get exactly what you do. And it builds up, you know, their selves as artists and their confidence and what they're doing. And so it's a big wheel, I guess.
It is a big community. Yeah,
it really is. And I have to say that one of the things that, you know, social media, there are pros and cons, but I have found being an artist on Instagram, I have to make sure that I pay attention to my baseline and keep my studio practice protected. And I'm still figuring out how to do that. But by being part of a community of artists on Instagram who are in it with me, you know, we're trying to become better artists. We're doing the work, we're showing up, we're tired some days, we're cranky some days. Some days we have a breakthrough and it's amazing. Mm-hmm. To be able to share that and experience that with a bunch of people, mm-hmm. is really incredible. And I think that it has taught me the power of that, that there are definitely things I am trying now in my practice because listeners of the show who we now kind of keep in touch with each other through Instagram, mm-hmm. have tried something. Mm-hmm. And I thought like, that's amazing. Like, okay, well, how do I fold that into my practice? And should, you know, like it's the community part of it. Like, if you feel like you need a community, if Instagram isn't too overwhelming, because if it's hurting your art practice, like get off of it, right? It's, you don't need it. But Instagram is an incredibly encouraging place, and you can say hello to people and form a community. It takes some time, but once you have it, that especially during this challenge that will have aired, but starts May 1st, it's 20 days of painting with a group of people. And there's no way on day 7 that you don't show up, because you know that all of these people that you're painting with are showing up. Mm-hmm. And that part of Instagram can be really fun.
Oh, yeah. And I was going to ask you about your challenge coming up and your format for your art club that you have in conjunction with your podcast. And yeah, it's it's starting May 1st. This will air a little bit later than that. Can people catch up, or do they need to they probably need to start, don't they?
You know, the thing about an art practice is that you can start on whatever day. Uh-huh. So what it's called, the 20 for 20 art challenge. And it's based on an idea that I think so many of us wait for life to give us the opportunity to start an art practice, like that time opens up, that we have the energy. And it's really encouraging people to to take the life they're living now and design an art practice that fits with it. Mm-hmm. Instead of waiting for life to fit with this make-believe art practice, go the other way. Say, what is the life I'm living now? What can I do now? And if that's 5 minutes a day, that's great. You know, so we aim for 20 minutes a day for 20 days. Mm-hmm. And it's a hashtag challenge. We also have a private Facebook group if people are don't necessarily feel comfortable sharing their work, because it's I'm trying a new medium. If you go to my Instagram, Kellyanne at Kellyanne Powers, mm-hmm. I'm trying watercolor. I'm terrified, but I'm going to learn so much. But it really is encouraging people to say, you know, have the success metric be mm-hmm. showing up. It's not about quality. It's certainly not about selling. It is purely the habit of holding time and seeing how it feels when you show up to your art every day and learn from that.
Very nice.
Well, it's interesting that that watercolor is kind of frightening for you, because that's what you come from, right? That's what you've seen.
It is. And it's been so good for me. Like when you're a couple years in, you know, I'm 10 years in now to acrylic. Mm-hmm. Like I'm starting at year one with watercolor. Yeah. And honestly, from a show host perspective, it's awesome, because I traveled a couple months ago and tried watercolor a little bit. And like, I find every once in a while, I'll do an acrylic. I tried gouache and I painted a scene that we had done for the last 20 for 20. So if you miss this 20 for 20, we do them a couple times a year.
Okay.
And if you follow the podcast or get on the newsletter, I talk about it there. But I was trying gouache, and because I was trying between gouache and watercolor for a travel medium, and I'd painted this tree in gouache, and it was so terrible. It was so terrible. I forgot how to mix color. I forgot how design worked. Like everything I knew from acrylic, I had just forgotten. And it was so interesting for me to be able to like hold up the acrylic version of that painting and then hold up the gouache painting and say the same artist did both of these. And one of these is okay. And one of these is truly terrible. And that's because learning is complicated. So yeah. Let's all maybe have a little bit of patience with ourselves.
Yeah.
I always tell my students that I'd rather juggle chainsaws than do watercolor. It is so unforgiving. And, you know, so I've kept that. I've worked on it a little bit, especially going through university and things, but it's a tough medium.
Yeah, it really
is. A whole different way of thinking.
So, you know, to kind of come into a landing here, words of wisdom that you've learned from your other artists on the interviews. Can you give us 3 or 5 tips of the trade?
Absolutely. And one of the things I mentioned this before, one of the things I love about the show is that, again, you hear one artist give you a suggestion and you're like, yeah, I know that's important, but I don't want to. Mm-hmm. And it's fine to not want to. You don't have to take any suggestions. Like we all design our own path. But if you've heard the 30th guest say it, you start to realize like, okay, maybe that is a tool I could try. Mm-hmm. And so one of those is limit your palette. Limit your palette. That so many artists talk about that they didn't really learn color until they limited their palette. And that was really true for me. A couple years ago, mm-hmm. I really limited my palette. And the freedom that comes with that after some adjustment is awesome. It's again, it's that vertical learning where suddenly you dive deep. Another one is to have your success metric be the habit. That the habit feeds everything. And I got that from daily painters, but it shows up with all painters. Mm-hmm. That when you can shift, it's so easy to think success is a pretty painting. And then when you can shift that success is the showing up, and a pretty painting is a nice byproduct, but it is not the success. The success is the showing up. Then suddenly you have liberated yourself to truly enjoy painting. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing is just be nice to yourself. That's so easy in theory. Like, yeah, be nice to yourself. But what does being nice to yourself look like when you just spent 4 hours on a painting and it went sideways and you don't know why, and you had all these great expectations for it, and how dare you ever think you're going to be a painter if this is the kind of work you create? Like all of that, stop. Like you showed up. Mm-hmm. That learning to mix color is a skill, and learning how we treat ourselves in our art practice is also a skill. Mm-hmm. So no matter where you are right now, we can get better. We can get better at that. And just paint a lot of paintings that, mm-hmm. you know, that's part of the habit part, but that painting a bad painting never feels good, but it is the stepping stone to better work. Mm-hmm. And if you can learn to be nice to yourself, you are going to learn so much in that painting. Mm-hmm. And then the final thing is that I think as artists, we look at where we want to be, and we're great goal setters. We have dreams. We're artists. We're made of dreams. Mm-hmm. But it means sometimes we look at where we're going, and we look at where we are, and we look at the distance between those two places. And that's where we look. That's where we measure. We say, I'm so far, I'll never be there. But we're looking at the wrong thing. Look at the progress you made yesterday, or today over yesterday, today over a year ago. Like that's the place we should be looking, because that's the place that's real and matters, and where we show, like, this is learning. That's what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah, I agree.
So wonderful. And Kelly, I just want everybody to know that they can find your podcast at learn to paint podcast, right.com.
LearnToPaintPodcast.com.
LearnToPaintPodcast.com. She has an art club on there that you can join. I love the categories. You have matte, gloss, and...
High gloss.
Different levels. They all come with certain perks and fun things to do. Your challenge is something that'll be recurring and will come up for everybody. And of course, Instagram, follow you on both that site and your site. Lots of ways to keep in touch with you, because I have to tell you, you are one inspiring artist. Let me tell you, I got so much out of this episode. Armin, what do you have to add?
I agree 100%. You know, your energy and your wisdom comes across, and we are lucky to talk to you, Kelly.
Well, thank you so much for having me. This has truly been a delight. I've made so many notes about this. This has been really great.
Oh, great. Look forward to having you again for a repeat. Okay, Kelly. Bye now, everybody.
The 2023 season is about to begin at Golden Apple Studio and Residency. 15 artists from across the land will have the honor of a residency this year in Downeast, Maine. Downeast, Maine will become home for 2 weeks, where artists can be inspired by the rugged shoreline, sounds of the lobster boats, and the smells of pine and ocean. Set your sights for 2024. Apply now for your residency. Spots are already filling up. You can contact Shelley Stevens, who is the artist and director, at SNSTEVENS. At goldenapplestudio.com. For more information, email Shelley at snsteven@goldenapplestudio.com. Thank you, Shelley, for sponsoring Art Ladders.
Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb, with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, ValerieAllenArt.com, ArminMersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious, and we'll see you next time.